Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN Sunday for Sunday, May 19th, 2024. And well, we've got another great show for you this week. I'll be joined in the first segment by Kevin Walsh, one half of the Legal Eagles and also a principal with Groom Law Group. And then Oliver Rennick of the Schwab Network will be here to help break down markets and the economy. So sit back, relax, enjoy this episode of BRN Sunday. We're going to kick things off with a look at what's happening on Capitol Hill. And joining us on the line, he is one half of the Legal Eagles. Kevin Walsh is a principal with Groom Law Group. That's an employee benefits law firm based in Washington, D.C., of all places. Kevin, always great to talk to you. And look, it's twice in 1 week, or three times in 1 week, because we had you on the podcast or the network on Sunday. You came on Wednesday to talk about the fiduciary rule. And here you are talking again.
Jeff, it's always going to be on the program.
Kevin, so there's been some developments this week. And before we talk about, well, I want to start off by asking you about what is a Congressional Review Act? Because there's a lot going on. Oh, let me back up. What's the latest when it comes to the fiduciary rule? Let's start there, Kevin.
So the latest with fiduciary is that, you know, litigation has been filed in the Northern District of Texas by the Federation of Americans for Consumer Choice. And we're going to have to watch that wind its way through the courts. But also this week, Senator Manchin and a number of Republican senators and a number of Republican House members announced that they are going to try to pass a Congressional Review Act resolution disapproving of the Department of Labor's new fiduciary rule.
Okay. And just refresh my memory on what the Congressional Review Act, is that something that Congress has on any regulation, not just DOL regs? They can look at any regulation and question it.
Yeah. So shortly after regulation is enacted, Congress has a number of days where if the House passes a resolution and the Senate passes the same resolution and the president signs that same resolution, that the regulation is wiped out of the Federal Register. Mm-hmm. And one thing with the Congressional Review Act, unlike many pieces of legislation, is that it doesn't require 60 votes to pass a filibuster in the Senate. It's not something that can be filibustered, which means that, you know, should you have a lineup where you have a House that wants to kill a reg, the Senate that feels the same way, and a president that feels the same way, then it's a streamlined legislative process to rebuking the agency. So I think the key thing that you heard there was that the president has to sign it.
Yeah.
And here, you know, here we've got, you know, momentum in the House. Mm-hmm. To rebuke the agency. There's enough momentum in the Senate where, you know, with Senator Manchin, it's very easy to see how you get to 50 or 51 votes. In all likelihood, a few more Democrats will probably sign on to the CRA. But where this leaves the CRA is, you know, in order for the bill to become a law, the president has to sign it. And, you know, President Biden would have reviewed and signed off on the fiduciary rule before it was promulgated. You know, it's his administration that put the rule out. So it's very unlikely that he's then going to turn around and sign legislation saying it's a bad rule and striking it down. So
yeah, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish your thought.
Yeah. So we look at that, and then you could say, well, are there the votes to override the veto? And realistically, it's tough to see a world where there are enough senators who, particularly Democratic senators, who are going to go against the wishes of the White House to, you know, override a presidential veto on a regulation that that president had an agency promulgate, particularly going into an election.
So Kevin, and the question I wanted to ask, is this like the talk about the toolbox when you are concerned about regulation? We talked about that last week on the network, and also on last week's BRN Sunday, that there was a lawsuit. So is this another tool in the toolbox to counter and to raise awareness, right? The more you talk about this stuff, it's more of a, because you said the president, you know, unless you get 2/3 in both houses, they can't override a veto, a presidential veto. So is this more part of the tool in the toolbox that kind of, hey, push back a little bit and send, maybe political sentiment of some different constituencies?
I think political sentiment is really gets it right. When you look at this, The CRA in 2017 was an effective tool by the Trump administration to get rid of rules by the Obama administration. Here, where the CRA would have to be done during the Biden administration for a Biden rule, it really looks more like a messaging piece where it will allow members of Congress to go on the record saying, we didn't like this thing, but it allows them to do it for Republican members. It allows them to do it in a manner where they get to say they opposed it. For Democratic members, it also allows them to, position themselves as, opponents of this rule, as, we are heading into an election. It's a tight election. And, members of both parties are cognizant that the fiduciary rule plays well in some constituencies and poorly in others.
Kevin, I was just thinking something. There was a, I'm doing this tongue in cheek, but I want to ask, they just announced this week that there's going to be some presidential debates before the convention, which is obviously very rare. You think the fiduciary rule comes up in any of those questions between President Biden and former President Trump?
You know, I don't want to bet on anything about the debates. I've learned enough in my career to know that there are areas where I'm going to put my foot in my mouth, and I don't want to predict about that.
Yeah, I know. I was just, but audience, I'm just tongue in cheek. To us in the retirement ecosystem, Kevin, this is important because this is, as you said on BRN AM on Wednesday, this is a real update and some real sea changes. And I can understand the pushback. None of us like change. So I can really understand the pushback. And I guess tongue in cheek, I was kind of asking you if this would kind of bubble up, but most likely, probably not one of the top questions. So
no,
Kevin,
I mean, I think we've got ERISA at 50, and I think there's an awareness that we look at the next few years or decades of ERISA, that the coverage gap is something we want to close. We'd like to have Americans save more, and we'd really like to help folks with the decumulation stage so that they're not worried about whether their nest egg is going to last through the rest of their lives. And so retirement could be a focal point of the debates, but I'd be surprised if it's fiduciary specific.
Yeah. And I mean, that would be nice and heavy. I think it would be kind of cool to have it called out. Kevin, what's next up in the toolbox? So, we had this Congressional Review Act, most likely passage, but ultimately not signed by the president. At least that's what the current thinking, not just your thinking, but the current thinking is. You've got the lawsuit that we talked about last week and the week prior. Anything else that we should possibly expect? This thing seems like it's its own reality TV show, unfortunately.
I think the key is to look for more lawsuits and to look for parties seeking immediate relief. So typically you have to wait until the end of a case before a rule is struck down or before the rule's upheld. In some cases, you can ask for the court to provide interim relief. So a temporary injunction, a temporary restraining order, some form of relief while the lawsuit's pending, and it's held to a higher bar, but it is based on the probability of success as the district court sees it. And in these cases where there's a really, September is when compliance comes into effect, it's tough to see a full case winding its way through the courts by September. So one thing to look for is when do the parties start seeking interim relief? And I would expect we see that in the near future.
Okay, so we'll have to keep our eyes and ears peeled for that. Well, Kevin, I guess, and don't forget, Kevin, we've got the Supreme Court kind of weighing in on, I don't know if there are any, it just popped into my head, this end of the session is in June. So anything on the docket there, maybe not related to fiduciary rule, but related to retirement or benefits in general?
So I think the big thing to watch there is the amount of deference that that courts are supposed to grant agencies. There's a handful of cases that are before the Supreme Court where it's considering, should the standard be that courts generally allow agencies to interpret statutes, or should courts interpret statutes themselves? And as we see those cases decided, it will shift the probability that the plaintiffs will win or the agency will win in fiduciary.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know, as an aside, I don't know how you keep your head on straight, because you got to be going in and, it's got to be spinning and all the things that you and your colleague Kevin Walsh and your other colleagues at Groom have to cover. How do you do it?
I mean, retirement security is a really interesting and exciting topic, and it's meaningful to Americans. So it's easy to stay focused and plugged in and to want to stay on top of this topic.
Yeah. Well, I could see you swimming or running on the treadmill and picking up a copy of the Federal Register and perusing it, although it'd be kind of hard to lift all the volumes. Kevin, we're going to have to leave you there. Give our best to your colleague, David Levine. We look forward to having you both back on the program next week. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, my friend.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, listeners.
Thanks, Kevin. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses. I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 yeah. years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Welcome back. Now, time to take a look at markets and the economy. Joining us on the line, Oliver Rennick is the lead anchor for the Schwab Network. Oliver, thanks for popping by the program this morning.
Always. Thank you very much, Mr. Snyder.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Rennick. And by the way, Mr. Snyder is my father. Anyway, let's talk about an important milestone. I want to get your reaction to this. Dow Jones Industrial Average hitting the 40,000 mark.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get your reaction to that because it's just an arbitrary number. What's the significance and what do you make of it?
Well, the significance is stocks are at all-time highs again this week. Dow specifically, it's a smaller subset of companies, but the general message is that we are still striking that harmonious balance between growth and inflation. Now, there is a very real kind of debate to be had again about whether or not it's Goldilocks, as some argue, or if it's more purgatory. And those two things kind of look similar. I've been arguing it's a little bit more on the purgatory side, but there are certainly some risks over the last month that have abated. And as those have abated, the market has found more confidence and rallied to highs. And the simplest one is that there was a fear last month that the Fed was going to have to start hiking again. And that kind of percolated through the narrative, probably prematurely. I was never really in the camp that they're going to really have to hike imminently, but definitely I remain in the camp that there is no cuts that should be really getting priced in at this point. But that's kind of a subject that's been, beat to a pulp. And the conclusion is that we're not going to do anything, basically. The Fed's not going to move. So the Fed becoming a little bit of a non-issue is generally good for markets. And so when we hear from Jerome Powell that he still thinks the data is mixed, he doesn't feel that he needs to tighten anymore. He feels that the economy is already being tightened. That's kind of reassuring to investors that, okay, we are avoiding like a worst-case scenario as far as policy goes. However, the data on the economy have taken a turn to the worst since basically a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Nominally, the data are holding in okay, but we are seeing some very real softening on employment metrics. The top line stuff, jobless claims and non-farm payrolls have been all right. You know, they are not like at levels that are obviously recessionary or scary, but they have deteriorated and some of the survey data suggests that inflation could worsen. And there was a little bit too much celebration, in my opinion, this week around the inflation data and around Powell, because even though inflation didn't pick back up on a month-over-month basis, and that's kind of what the market was celebrating, it still is very high, and the other economic data are softening. So that is not a good combination. Market is still trading softening data and bad data as a good thing, which makes sense if the Fed maybe is going to respond to it, but there's not a lot of evidence that they can respond to it. The evidence to me is still compelling that they cannot cut rates right now. So a little bit probably too much euphoria.
Yeah, well, you know, isn't that the case, though, in the irrational exuberance? I think it was Alan Greenspan that talked about that, that, you know, people that when the market gets to the highs of highs, people, everybody, including, you know, your tailor or your you know, your grocer, start talking about it, right? So that's, you kind of
sure,
get that.
We kind of got that again because all these meme stocks went crazy again this week. So we did kind of get a little bit of that finding its way in, you know, to the conversation.
Yeah, and that's what, and like you said, that's where people get hurt. Oliver, I want to turn our attention you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Most people do. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, some people will get lucky and get the right timing and be able to, you know, make big money on these parabolic spikes in really bad financial companies, just financially, just very low quality companies. But the majority of people will lose money on that. So it is a kind of sign that there's a lot of, to some degree, surprising risk appetite to just kind of straight up gamble on some of the stuff.
I would turn people to watch the movie The Boiler Room and J.P. Marlin and come back to us next week. Mm-hmm. Oliver, let's talk about earnings. I know you want to talk a little bit about earnings. There's some information coming out. What can you tell us, and what should we be thinking about going into the upcoming week, which is on the heels of Memorial Day?
Yeah. NVIDIA is the big highlight next week. That is still such an important stock because it really is, you know, the paragon of growth right now. And there's, as economic data weakens, the implication is that growth will soften as well. And as that happens, the companies that are growing command higher valuations and are in greater demand. And so it's really important to see how surprisingly good NVIDIA numbers can be. If there is a big shock again and they are beating estimates and raising guidance, you very well could have another concentrated run-up in the stock market driven by that stock and a few of its peers. However, I think that the bar is going to be significantly higher this time and probably a bigger chance that even if NVIDIA's numbers are good enough for that stock, that it won't pull up some of the peers alongside of it. It's just getting a little bit distorted, in my opinion. When you go outside the top three or four chip makers connected to AI right now, which is like NVIDIA, AMD, Taiwan Semi, to some extent, some of the memory stocks that are going to be needed as well. But that's like where it breaks down very quickly, where a bunch of these semiconductors that are up 50%, 100%, 70% over the last year are literally still showing no growth or are expected to inflect to a very low positive growth. I mean, we saw it with Applied Materials, which is a provider of wafer fab equipment to chip makers. I mean, stocks up 70% over the past year. It managed to rally on earnings, or at least bounce a little bit on earnings this week, but it's just not even in the same universe as the companies that are actually making the new hardware. So to me, there's a lot of irrationality going on within the chip making space that is getting to a point where disappointment will probably have some major consequences, and possibly even if NVIDIA does do well, I'm not sure how sustainable the rally is going to be in the companies that are attached to it, because we're already seeing some competitive elements. We saw this week that Microsoft is looking at AMD chips because NVIDIA is too far in demand and they don't have enough. You know, there are some kind of very real examples of some of these chip makers bumping up against each other, which would challenge the notion that NVIDIA should be bringing everybody along with it. So could be a really interesting week. It's the most important sector for the market, almost always semiconductors, because they have growth components and they have global economic cyclicality. And a lot of these chip makers still are being dragged down by that cyclicality, which matches the softening of the economic data we've had. So a lot is riding on NVIDIA to kind of give us a place to buy into growth.
Oliver, last question. Oliver, artificial intelligence, is it still the – you mentioned meme stocks, and so, you know, GameStop and AMC, right? I mean, that's happened several years ago. But is AI still the darling theme, right? That's
for sure.
Know, there's always a you know, Baskin-Robbins favorite flavor, chocolate,
yeah, 100%.
Pistachio. So it's still AI?
AI is the pistachio, yes. The meme stuff is – I mean, the fundamentals on these companies – are still just awful. GameStop, AMC and stuff. And the market is still very skewed towards higher quality, and quality from a very financial definition, positive cash flow, earnings, because ultimately, like NVIDIA, you know, valuations on NVIDIA have gone up, but not like blisteringly high. They are pretty high, but the forward estimate's pretty reasonable considering all the growth that's supposed to be there. So no, absolutely, they are the most important group, the hot thing, the darling child, the pistachio flavor. And that's why there's so much pressure for them to keep that narrative going next week.
Pistachio was the favorite flavor of my brother, Andrew, and Andy. And mine always was chocolate. So I'm a basic chocolate guy. Oliver, Oliver, before we go, what's your favorite? Do you have a favorite ice cream flavor?
You know, I actually really do like pistachio. Mm-hmm. I think it's underrated. Coffee, too, is good. But I guess as a kid, I was a mint chocolate chip guy. So.
Yeah, I grew up with 31 flavors. Now there's like 3,100 flavors. Oliver Rennick, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks for popping by. We'll talk to you again next week.
See you, Jeff. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN Sunday. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more and all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and another important topic. So until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.